Good morning, everyone. Welcome. As Tom said, welcome to Heritage Days at the chapel. So that was his comment when I walked in today, that today is Heritage Day. Hey, so you may notice that we are not going to be in Genesis today. A couple of reasons why. We'll get back to Genesis. If you remember correctly, we left Joseph. He had just moved his family to Genesis, and we probably have three more Sundays in Genesis. So for those of you who are ready for a break, you'll get a break. A couple reasons why I went in the direction that I did today. The first is today's communion. So I was thinking, what do we do for communion? And so I thought this is fits nicely. Number two, a podcast that I listened to last week really inspired this. If Dave listened to the same podcast, which he may have, he's going to hear the same thing twice. So I'm going to have to give a lot of credit today to a podcast which featured Richard Dent, or Reed Dent, who really influenced most of this talk today, and also Kenneth Bailey, which I'll talk a little bit more about. The other thing is, the place that we left off last time was looking at how Joseph forgave his brothers, and how that was a type of Christ in the way that God forgives us. And today we're gonna use another example of God's wonderful forgiveness for us and His crazy love. And so that's where I want to go as well. One last thing I want to throw out there for those of you who watch The Chosen. If you've not watched The Chosen yet, it's worth your time. It's a seven-year look at the life of Christ. And if you want to see Christ's parables come alive, wait till you see them shown on The Chosen. It gives you a whole different perspective of who Jesus is. There's going to be things you don't like there, which will be part of our lesson today as well. Now, so where we're going today is a very, very famous. In fact, I remember a long time ago, Dave preached this when he actually showed a painting. How many of you remember the painting that Dave showed when he preached this? Thank you. And so we're going to go back to a very familiar parable of Jesus that you have heard over and over again, and that is the parable of the lost things, as I'm going to call them today, because I'm going to try to go through all of them. So where we're going to start out, though, is we're going to start with the first verse of this passage. Now, the tax collectors and the sinners were gathered around to hear Jesus. By the way, if you're into missions, this is wonderful. The very people that you want to hear your message are here. It's the tax collectors and sinners, and they're gathered around Jesus. And again, if you see The Chosen, you'll see this oftentimes the case when you're watching that. But Mel, wasn't your sister, is it, who was an extra in the Sermon on the Mount in The Chosen series? Sister and niece. So if you look closely, no, you'll never see them. They're not going to be visible. So the tax collectors and sinners are gathered around listening to Jesus. Verse 2. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Now, Eugene Peterson argues that the book of Luke, starting at about chapter 10 and it goes past this passage, is a travelogue where a bunch of people follow Jesus, including a bunch of Pharisees and teachers of the law. Now, we tend to group all Pharisees together, but in reality, there were segments of the Pharisees who wanted to follow Jesus and who followed Jesus. These Pharisees might have been his critics, but they might have been people who were following him. But they muttered because he was what? Welcoming sinners. Welcoming sinners. So that's the context in which, again, if you remember rabbis, what did rabbis do? They took things that happened in the moment and they made them a teaching lesson. So the Pharisees and the teachers of the laws are muttering and saying, "This man eats with sinners." So these next three parables are all going to address the muttering. Jesus is going to take that muttering, and what is their concern? He eats with sinners. Jesus is going to answer why he eats with sinners in these next three stories that he tells. Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you had 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And then when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and then goes home. And then he calls his friends and his neighbors together. "Rejoice with me. I have found my lost sheep." I tell you, the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than the 99 righteous people who do not need to repent. So here's our first lost thing. It's a sheep. And it's lost. Who knows? Sheep are dumb. It probably did something dumb and wandered away and got lost, because that's what sheep do. And so I never thought about this until I was studying for this. If you look, the 99 are in open country. They're not in the fold. They're out in the fields. And I never thought about it. How stupid is it to leave your 99 secured sheep to go find one dumb one? Right? One lost one. But that's what the shepherd does. The shepherd leaves the 99 ones that he has to go find the one that is lost. When he comes home, he joyfully puts it on his shoulder and he calls his friends and neighbors together and they have a celebration. And Jesus says, I tell you, there are more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner than 99 who are saved. The Lord loves to see sinners saved. What he's saying here, is, again, if you think about, I don't mean to push this too hard, but we often don't see ourselves in the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, but we're the saved. In this case, we are very much in with the teachers and the teachers of the law and the Pharisees. And so what Jesus is saying, listen, in heaven we rejoice more with one new person coming in than the 99 of you out there who are safely with us. Ouch. What? You care more about that thing than you do us? That doesn't seem right, Jesus. That seems wrong. But Jesus says, that's where my heart is, finding those who are lost. Let's go to the second story. So the first thing is a sheep. It's lost. The ratio is 99 to 1. One lost thing, 99 things saved. Number two, lost story. Or suppose a woman has 10 coins and loses one. Wow, our ratio has really changed. It went from 99 to 1 to 9 to 1. Suppose a woman has 10 coins and loses one. And doesn't she light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me. I have found my lost coin. In the same way, I tell you that rejoicing in the presence of angels of God over one sinner who repents. Same story. Although this time, the coin does not do anything to get lost. It doesn't wander away. How do coins get lost? They just do, right? It's probably because of something we do. Think about the things that are lost in your house. How did they get lost? For years, I used to think people came in and stole them, but I'm no longer convinced that. They're there someplace, but they're lost. It's nothing that the coin did to be lost. It just got lost. Many people believe that this woman's coins that she lost were part of her marriage dowry, the paid for her marriage, or it had part of her family's inheritance. And so they had both a value, a financial value and a sentimental value. So when she found it, when she lost it, it wasn't just any coin that was lost. It was a special coin. And so when she finds the coin, what does she do? She calls her family, friends, and neighbors together, and they come and they rejoice with her over the one that is found. And Jesus emphasizes the point again. That's what we do in heaven. Sometimes I think in our place that we are in life, we forget how much Jesus rejoices when somebody comes to him. Because we live with people who are in the fold, who are in the 9 coins that are saved. So if you're the Pharisees, teachers of the laws, and the sinners, and the tax collectors listening to these parables, you get the parable theme. It's pretty simple. Something gets lost or is lost. Somebody goes to find it. Somebody comes home and they have a party. It's a simple story, right? That's the theme. We got it. The ratio is changing. That's the only thing that seems to be changing and the thing that's lost. So I'm sure that the people are, when Jesus starts a third story, they kind of know what's coming. Because we know something's going to get lost. Somebody's going to go find it. And when they find it, they're going to come home and they're going to rejoice and they're going to throw a party. Third parable. Jesus continues, there was a man who had two sons. Wow, the ratio is really tiny now. One lost, one found. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me your share of the estate. Now, Kenneth Bailey traveled. He's a Presbyterian minister, and he decided to travel in the Middle East and go to peasants' villages to find out, has this ever happened in your village? So he would walk into the villages and he would strike up conversations with people in the Middle East and peasant villages away from the urban centers. And he would say to them, hey, has there ever been a time when a son in your village has walked up to his dad before he died and he said, could you split the estate? And the answer he got was never. That couldn't happen. See, the thing that we don't understand, because we don't live in the Middle East in a peasant village someplace, is what this guy was really saying to his dad. Under Jewish law, how much of the estate should he get? Remember, think about our patriarchs. What does the oldest son get? Double portion. He should get 1/3 of the estate. His older brother would get 2/3 of the estate. I know for you younger siblings, that doesn't seem fair either. It's the way it was. So he's saying to his dad, Dad, I want 1/3 of the estate. But what he's really saying in this culture is what? Drop dead, Dad. You have no value to me alive. In this culture, to say to your dad that you wanted your inheritance early is to say to Dad, I don't have any value or respect to you. When Kenneth Bailey asked the people, what would happen to a son who did that? The most frequent answer was what? That father would have to beat that son severely. Why? Because in an honor-based culture, you can't let such a slam against who you are go without a severe response. In cultures like this, we still have things that are called what? Honor killings, where you must kill an offender who brings shame to your family to restore your family's honor. What Kenneth Bailey discovered is that in such situations like this, in some villages, what the village does is they get together and they make a pact with each other. If we ever see that child again return to their parents' home, we will gather up together and we will kill them. We don't know if that's what the villagers in this village did. Is that why the dad ran? But the major sin that this young man committed was not that he wasted his money in wildest living. It was the shame that he brought to his dad by saying, I want you dead. I have no respect for you. I have nothing that I value in you. Think of Jesus' listeners. They're listening to this thinking, wow, this is awful. And then what happens in the next verse? The dad, does he beat him? He does something scandalous. So he divided the property between them. What? What a weak father. What a merciful father. What a father that is going to do something for this son that is not expected, that is way, way more merciful than he should. He is willing to take the shame, take the humiliation on himself in order that his son can have what he wants, even though it's not right and it's going to get him in trouble. I'm sure the people scoffed at this father. I can't imagine what it was like for this father to walk through the village and have people scoffing at him and saying, what a weak father he was. Not long after that, the young son got together all that he had and he set off for a distant country and he squandered his wealth in wild living. This is the part that usually gets us. He spent everything. After he spent everything, oh, we can take that when the son went off to live in some far-off land, he went to the Gentiles. Here's this Jewish young man going off to live among the Gentiles. Everybody would say, what is he doing living out there, right? Why is he out there with those foreigners? They're going to make him, contaminate him, get him turned away from our beliefs. This is going to be tragic. After he spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he has no money. Things are tough. So he went and he hired himself out to a citizen of the country. The Greek word here means that he cleaved to this man, which is the same cleaving that you have in marriage. He is so desperate. He is so downtrodden. He is so in need that he latches on to this guy in this extreme needy state. And he says, don't leave me. I'm about to die if you're not here. I need you. Now, this reminds me. Oh, so what does the guy do? So he went and he hired himself to a man of the country who sent him into the field to feed pigs. Okay, young Jewish man in a Gentile country. He's been assigned to do what? Feed pigs. The Jews were told what? Never eat pig. Never sacrifice pig. And so what did the Jews mostly do? Never touch pigs. You know, if we're going to be contaminated by eating it and sacrificing it, we're going to stay far enough away from a pig that we're not even tempted to eat a pig because we don't even see pigs. Now, again, in honor-based countries, when it's hard to say no because you don't want to disrespect anybody, you often do things. I'll never forget this. We interviewed a man for a job when I was still teaching, and twice he came and interviewed. Twice we offered him the job. Twice he led us to believe he was going to take the job, and at the very last minute, twice he did not. And we finally realized, talking to people in his culture, he just couldn't tell you no. Because you had to save face. So one of the things that scholars think about is this man who he cleaved to didn't know how to get rid of him. And he said, you know, I got to offer him a job. But I'm going to offer him a job that I know he's not going to take. He's Jewish. There's no way he's going to feed pigs. Then I'm going to save face because I'm going to say I offered him a job. He's going to be able to save face because he's going to be able to say, I couldn't take the job because I can't feed pigs. But what does the man do? He feeds pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. This is a man in desperation. This is a man who is so lost, so corrupted, so empty that he has no one to turn to. So he turns to things and he begins to cleave to things that can't bring him satisfaction. Isn't that what happens to us in our sinful states? When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. So here we see. This is where I think sometimes we miss the message of this parable. You know one thing that's different about this story? If you're listening, you're the people that are listening to Jesus. Did anyone go out to try to find the young man? The father does not do what the woman does with the lost coin and what the shepherd does with the lost sheep. He stays at home. Which tells me there's something different than trying to find lost sheep who are dumb, coins who get lost on their own, and people who get lost. People have free will. They get to choose what they get to do. The lesson that appears to be here is that when people that you love get lost, you got to let them go in a different way than you do sheep and coins. What does the man do in this story? He stays home and stays on the porch and watches. And just watches. Isn't there times in our lives when we have people in our families and our friends and other people who are lost, and our desire is to go get them and yank them back with a hook and pull them back to our homes? But if we take anything from this story, it's to stay on the porch and watch. But man, that's hard to do. But that's one big difference in this story. There's nobody going out to find the young man who was lost, but the father is waiting at home. Number two, it looks like this man is really desperate here. He's really repentant. But I want to show you, I think, Hans, I have the next slide. So here's a big debate. Did Jesus do this on purpose? So the words that Jesus puts in this young man's voice, in this young man's part of the story, says this: I have sinned against heaven and against you. The example in the Old Testament that most closely follows this is Pharaoh. Pharaoh says almost exactly the same thing. And again, in Hebrew, they couldn't have put Lord your God because the Jews wouldn't say that. They would say the kingdom of God or your kingdom. And so it'd be even closer to this. Did Jesus do this on purpose, or was this just coincidental? This happened. Pharaoh said this right after the plague of the locusts. Was Pharaoh repentant when he said this? He wasn't. What happened when the locusts went away? He came and he said to Aaron, and he said, pray that this plague goes away. The locusts went away, and then he what? Changed his mind. So if we go back to this, was this young man really repentant? I don't think so. I think he was desperate. His son, he knows what? He knows my father is weak. My father is merciful. My father is a sucker. He'll take any story I give him. Isn't it crazy that Jesus was willing to portray his father as somebody who is easy to take and easy to take advantage of? The question that I have, which I don't know the answer to, is why did he say, I can't become my father's son again? I'm ready to be a servant. I don't know. What did he expect his father to do? He certainly didn't expect his father to kill him or beat him when he got home. Why should he? His father already proved that he wouldn't do that. But I think a lot of times we get this story wrong when we say, man, this guy was repentant. And Jesus had to respond in grace. But he probably, like Joseph's brothers, Joseph forgave his brothers before they were repentant. I'm going to argue that Jesus, in this story, God as the Father, forgave his son before he even knew that he was repentant. And I'm not sure that he was. So if we go back to the story, he says in his mind, I'm going to tell my father that I've sinned against him and against heaven, and I'm no longer worthy to be a son, and I'd be like one of your hired servants. So he gets up, verse 20, he got up and went to his father. But while he was a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him, and he ran to his son and threw his arms around him and kissed him. Dad's waiting on the porch. He's looking. He sees the son walking a long way off. And he runs. Now, does he run so that nobody kills his son before he gets there? Does he run because he's happy to see his son? Does he run for both reasons? And again, this is a well-known fact. In fact, the podcast talked about this as well. Men in this culture do not run. Why? Because you got to pick your crazy robe up between your legs. You got to tuck it up in your belt that makes it look like you're wearing a big diaper. And it's kind of embarrassing. And then that's the way you run. Right? And so you don't do that because it's awkward. And so what is this man willing to do again for his son who has what? Shamed him, despised him, and rejected him? He's willing to humiliate himself one more time by running to his son. Does he know what kind of state his son is in when he sees his son from afar off? Does he know his son is repentant? No way. Again, this reminds us of Joseph, right? Joseph forgave his brothers. And what did Joseph do with his brothers when he met them and they finally revealed who he was? He threw his arms around them and he kissed each one of them, every crazy one of them. What does the father do in this case? He runs up there, hugs his son, kisses his son. And his son says what? His son says to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. By the way, he never finishes the rest of it. Is that because his father interrupted him? Is that because he just couldn't get there because he had tears in his eyes by this point and he can't go on because he's crying? We don't know. He never finishes the rest of us, but I don't think the father cared. I try to debate back and forth in the story. Did his father interrupt him? Did he not say it? And I don't know which one. Fill in the details because we don't know in your own mind. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For the son of mine was dead, is alive again. He was lost and he is found. So they begin to celebrate. Same thing, right? Lost, found, celebration. The listeners at this point are expecting another story or Jesus to make his point, because we've heard it three times now. Things are lost, things that are found, things are celebrated. That's the story. The story, though, you all, think about the story that he told. The amazing grace of God. The God is willing to forgive way easier than we are. God is willing to forgive in a humiliating way, in a way that brings shame to himself. We sang it over and over again today. Thank you for the songs you picked. Dying on a cross, what a humiliating way to die. What a to suffer the humiliation that Jesus suffered in order to restore our relationship with him. So at this point, there's got to be this pause in the listeners, because they've heard the story. The story is complete. Same theme, same way. Everybody gets to relax. I'm sure the Pharisees and the teachers of the law are thinking, wow, we didn't get hit with that one, did we? I wonder, did Jesus look at the teachers of the law and the Pharisees and a twinkle in his eyes and smile and like, join in with the celebration? Are you ready? We're going to celebrate these sinners. And then he tells about the fourth thing that was lost. Meanwhile, the older son was out in the fields. He came near the house. He heard the music of the dancing, and he called to one of the servants and asked him, what's going on? Your brother has come back, he replied. Your father has killed the fatted calf because he has him back safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So the father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, look, after all these years, I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your order. You never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, you know, when you're in a fight with your spouse about the children, that child of yours. And so this is kind of similar, right? I had nothing to do with that child. I don't know how. Just, you know, we found it in the weeds someplace. But that son of yours has squandered your property with prostitutes, has come home, and you killed a fatted calf for him. So here the teachers of the law and the Pharisees had to say, oh, wow. Did it hit them right away? That's us? That's what we're over here muttering like the older son? How often do we mutter when we see God's grace given out to other people that we think don't deserve it and shouldn't have it? I've been your faithful servant. I haven't sinned since 1983. And what do I get? Nothing. They get all the celebration. I don't think the teachers of the law and the Pharisees are the only people that do that. I think we can all do that at times. God, why are you giving grace to them? That person doesn't deserve grace. Verse 31, my son, the father said, you have always been with me. Everything I have is yours. But we've had to celebrate and be glad because the brother of yours, by the way, the father does what? He turns it over and says, this is your flesh and blood. This is just not my son. He's your brother. Your brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. how in the world do we keep in touch with the grace that it took God to forgive us? That running to us, because God had to run to each and every one of us. How do we lose that when we live in the house for a number of years? We get so caught up in the comfort in us of living with God. We get so caught up in the comfort of being in the fold that we forget what it's like to be out there and to see Jesus running at us. When we see God running at others, we think, they don't deserve that. But they deserve it just as much as we do. How do we hang on? The joy that Jesus gets from seeing the lost come back, but seeing those that return come back. How do we have the same passion to welcome in those that Christ is bringing into the kingdom? Those are hard things. It's easy, again, to condemn the older brother here. But we're either in one of those two states. We're either the older brother who has a tendency to forget the grace that we received, or we're out, lost, needing grace. Lots of times we're both, right? Have we really not sinned since 19? Well, most of you weren't even born in 1983. Some of you in 2013. No, we've sinned since then. The year that Twyla and I got married, I bought an album by Benny Hester. I'm sure hardly anyone has ever heard of Benny Hester. Maybe a few of you have. In that album, yes, thank you, Benny Hester fans out there. In that album, the album was called Rubber Canoe, which is the weirdest Christian album cover name I think I've ever heard. He had a song on there called He Ran. Phillips, Craig, and Dean actually re-released it a number of years later. I think that album came out, I looked it up yesterday to see, at 1985, which was the year that Twyla and I got married. It's a long time ago. But I want to play, if it actually worked, did it work? I want to play the Philip, Craig, and Dean version of this song because it does such a beautiful job of describing this story in a different way. And then we'll have communion.